Welcome to Death Watch.
This is Death Watch.
Death Watch.
Death Watch.
We are watching death.
We're
so that
we're,
you don't have to. We're keeping an eye on that guy.
We're keenly observing.
Yeah.
Its work, his work,
their work.
They
don't want to be trans exclusionary with death.
But also, is death just one person?
There could be several hundred thousand.
I feel
of
like
them.
It's a big job.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a theory that I had back in the 90s, which is that if Santa Claus, you know, could be, if the Santa Claus conundrum could be solved by suggesting that there are multiple incarnations of Santa Claus, the death thing is clearly going to fall into the same rubric, which is that you've just got angels of death wandering across the cosmos, taking people as need be. My name is Matt Brown.
Is this our intro?
This is it. This
okay.
is we're in the show now.
And I am Matthew Price, as I always am.
Yeah, indeed. So if you've never heard of us before, and God knows, good for you.
Don't run us down like that.
No, I'm going to start by running us down.
This is your problem if you haven't heard of us.
Yeah, anyway. Right. You haven't heard from us. What is wrong with you?
Yeah. Reevaluate all your life choices.
We have spent the last 12 years doing another podcast called Mammo, which was hosted at row3.com.
Yeah, we're exhausted. It was a 12-year-long podcast. We never stopped.
We never stopped. And let me tell you, there are aspects of your daily life that you just don't want recorded.
No, and around year four, things got dark.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that show, we just talked about the movie business in general, sort of how pop culture and movie dollars were intersecting, what audiences liked, and that was all fine. But now that the movies as an art form itself may be dying, it was time for a change of pace. And microphones. So, if you have listened to Mammo in the past and this is a new experience for you, we're in a real booth. There's no guy over on the right.
There's no guy asking if we have butter.
Yeah, about to ask me for any butter. So that's going to be a massive production quality right there.
So we've been podcasting for a long time, and I think our thing, is it our thing?
Yeah, we have a thing.
We had a kind of a verite style on our podcast where you could hear outside sound, but this seemed like a good opportunity to make some stylistic changes.
Indeed.
So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, and so the concept, came to me a couple of months ago, which is just that there's this bizarre phenomenon. It's not a bizarre phenomenon.
No.
It's a completely expectable phenomenon called the end of life. But more specifically, for guys you and I's age, like we're sort of tail end Gen X guys, a lot of people who had huge impacts on us growing up, from a movie perspective, from a pop culture perspective, they are now in the process of dying because, generally speaking, they were 20 or 30 years older than us. And, when people get into their 70s and 80s, they tend to die.
They pass away.
Yeah.
And also, people die younger than that.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's been, I think by anyone's reckoning, 2016 was a pretty astonishing year.
Yeah, it was a real eye-opener.
2017 has seem to let up a little bit, if only because there's just not as many people left.
2016 took a cut. Yeah, for sure.
But, even in the last few weeks running up to the recording of this show, we lost Tom Petty. It's not been a good year in that sense. So, but we don't want this to be sad.
No.
It is sad, and we acknowledge that there's genuine loss here, and depending on the person and depending on who you are, man, some of these can hit you hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's okay to take a knee for a minute and just let it hit you.
Yeah.
And there's, but when you get back up again, we should be, I'd rather have a wake than a memorial.
Yeah,
if
absolutely.
That makes sense.
No, that's for sure, and that's kind of in line with my thinking as well. Another thing that, I always think about is, a very good piece of advice that I saw written down like about 5 or 10 years ago was that you should always, if you're a jogger or if you like to walk, you should always jog or walk in graveyards because you need to kind of subliminally remind yourself that, this is where we're all going. There's nothing unusual about death. It's coming for everybody. It's the natural end of everything that you're doing. So, one of the things I think hit everyone so hard last year was, like you said, there was such a cadence of it. It just kept coming and coming and coming, and you'd lose a person after a person after a person.
Yeah.
And but like there wasn't actually,
every week.
Yeah, there wasn't actually, as much as we like to joke about it, 2016 was not actually a demon that came for all the people that we care about, right? Like, it was just a random conflux of a series of celebrity deaths, And there will be more of those random confluxes, and then there will be great patches of no conflux. And either way, I was like, we can use this show to some extent to, like you said, to celebrate the work of people that we've lost, but also to just remind ourselves, it's like, yeah, everyone who's out there, everyone you love, everyone who, you know, that you don't know personally, that you do know personally, this is coming for all of them. And I don't mean that to sound grim. I'm just like, that's real life. That's what's going to happen. So let's, you know, let's appreciate what we have while we have it. And then, you know, maybe offer up a eulogy for those who have gone on. So to kick things off, and I don't know exactly why he seemed like the right guy to kick things off, but he really did. We're going to be talking about the work of character actor extraordinaire Harry Dean Stanton, who passed away shortly before I conceived of this show, like a month ago. Like, it was very recent.
Yeah.
He was 91 years old. So quite a lengthy career. I believe he had done something like 250, 270 movies in his time as an actor, which in his case would have been pretty easy because he tended to drift pretty seamlessly between character roles. So roles that didn't necessarily require a huge quantity of time from him. He only starred in a handful of movies. Otherwise, he was, you know, there for the good bits, the fun bits.
Yeah.
So that's who we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, and so... And, you know, he is definitely one of those guys, one of those faces that you see all the time. And a bit unique in the sense that there's very few character actors who people know their names, like on sight. But Harry Dean Stanton is one of them, partly because he has, I think, one of the great cadenced names of all working actors. It's so fun to just say Harry Dean Stanton.
Yep.
It rolls off you.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at his early work, he goes by Dean Stanton and not Harry Dean Stanton.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Aww.
There was another actor named Harry Stanton, and he didn't want to get confused. There was an acting, you know, union thing where you couldn't use his first name for a while until the other actor passed away in like the late 70s.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I think, okay, let's, before we go any further, we should outline the actual concept of the show. So as we said, you know, guys, sorry, we're new at this. It's going to take a couple episodes to shake this down, but here's what we're planning to do. And please, you know, you can leave us feedback at modernsuperior.com if you think that this is, if there's something that we're missing.
No, there's no input. Fuck you.
No.
Oh, sorry.
Stop. Stop.
I just want to make sure we get that parental.
Yeah, thank you. That's right. Yeah. Here's the... The general premise is that when one of these titans passes, we will announce a show.
Yep.
We will each pick a film or a work from, because it may not always be movie actors, but we will each pick a film or a work from that person's life that we will review.
That we have not personally seen. So we will pick something from their CV that we haven't previously looked at.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
And so we will look at that. I mean, I found that doing this episode, I also did sort of a bunch of, you know, spin-off work. Like I saw some other films involving Harry Dean Stanton that I probably wouldn't have seen otherwise, just to sort of fill out my sense of the man. Those are the optional extras, I guess you could call them.
Sure.
And then there's the obvious stuff. Like, I think every time one of these guys goes down, or ladies, goes down, you're going to find that, you know, there's the stuff you don't need to, like, I don't need to watch Alien again just because Harry Dean Stanton died. I know exactly how good he is in Alien, and we will talk about that later. But those are, like, the optional extras. And I suspect that I will push a list onto our Twitter account, which is Death Watch Pod, of sort of here's the homework. Here's what we're doing in preparation for this episode if you want to join in. And if not, hey, man, no worries. It's not like, you know, we're going to be spoiling anything. These movies are decades and decades old.
And the other thing is, we're not trying to replicate what goes on in the sort of public sphere already. So there's already lots of, you know, there. If you sort of Google for any of these people that pass away, there's plenty of obituaries. We're not trying to take the place of that process, I guess, because it's a valuable thing that people get to grieve over someone and kind of, you know, reevaluate their lives, celebrate them. But we want to dive a little deeper on the work if we can, because, you know, that's what's going to stick around.
Yeah, absolutely. And placing context around work is more and more, like, the older I get, is the more interesting part, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a single point review of a movie is one thing, but sort of being like, here's how it places into the context of the time, the culture it was born into, the career of the person as a whole. That's, I mean, those are lofty ambitions. don't quote me on that. Maybe I'll just be like, hey, it was pretty good.
We're going to have flashes of coherence.
Yes.
That's what we promise you.
If we are lucky.
From day one. Mm-hmm. Occasional Salience.
Yes.
That's it.
Occasional salience. Correct. If this episode wasn't called...
That's our brand.
That's our brand, Occasional Salience. If you've ever listened to Mammo, you know that... So we did 475 of those episodes, and I'd say about 7 of them had some serious salience in them. Like, really good.
Out of almost 500 episodes, I'd say we strung together 11 sentences.
That's right. Indeed. So just a little bit further housekeeping. So as I said, our Twitter is Death Watch Pod. We are hosted at the Modern Superior Network, which you can find at modernsuperior.com. Many other fine shows there as well.
Great shows. Also, Modern Superior maintains a Patreon link, which we really appreciate if you take the time to go check it out. And there's going to be bonus content there from our show. There's bonus content from other shows coming up there. It is a worthwhile group of folks doing, I think, really great work.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, we again, this is our pilot episode. I think next episodes, or we will have a bit more insight into other shows on Modern Superior that are directly connected to what we're doing, and maybe that you should go check out as a result of the episodes that we're doing. But for right now, all of them are great. Go listen to all of them.
Sure.
Just right now, go to the page. Just download everything. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you back?
I am back. And as for us. By the time you hear this, these shows will either be in the iTunes store and the Play store, or they won't. But that'll just be a function of time. They will obviously both be submitted to those stores, so please subscribe on the device of your choice.
Yes.
And then one last thing I did want to say is that just because we've never really used Letterboxd in previous podcasting efforts, I will create a Letterboxd list monthly of recommended viewing relating to each episode with a link to the show, so you can follow us on Letterboxd as well. Should the show have its own Letterboxd account? Let's discuss right now, since we haven't talked about it before. What do you think?
Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah, not bad, eh?
I love that idea.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Curated list for every show?
Yeah, that's
easy.
Right. Yeah, there you go. And then it doesn't clutter up my feed, which God knows is cluttery enough. All right.
So let's talk about... in broad strokes, what is the artistic life of Harry Dean Stanton? So one of the things about our show is, obviously, first of all, we don't have personal connections to any of these folks.
That we know of.
Even if we did, this is not a show. I'm not particularly interested in the private lives of these public figures. I really, you know, other than how it informs their artistic approach to things. So we're not going to... You know, if you want to know about his family and those sorts of things, whatever public information is out there, you should check that out. But what we really want to talk about, I guess, is the work.
Mm-hmm.
Let me start off by saying there's a quote from Roger Ebert where he said, "No movie with Harry Dean Stanton or M. Emmett Walsh in it can be all bad."
Yep.
And I truly believe that to be the case, and that the beauty of Harry Dean Stanton is that regardless of the size of the part he shows up, at least that scene will be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There is, so he has a pretty fascinating career. He started off kind of in as a lot of people in his generation did that started acting. He started off in episodic TV in the 50s, westerns. He was probably on like Have Gun Will Travel and those kinds of shows, and you know, Murderer on the Left, these kinds of parts, right? So he's just like a bit player in Hollywood.
And definitely had the face and the style for that too, right? Like he looks like an old West character. And I don't even just mean when he was older, when he was younger too. Like he's got that sort of raggedy man hanging out outside the saloon.
He looks like he looks like a guy who works on a ranch, but not the head guy.
No.
Who works on the ranch.
That's right.
He looks like one of the other guys.
Yeah, exactly.
So he starts off doing all those kinds of things. The interesting thing is that he has these interesting connections in his life. So one of his lifelong friends was Jack Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually Nicholson's roommate.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they lived together in Hollywood. And if you go back to kind of the early part of his career, I'm just scrolling through because I want to find the name of the film, but if you go back to kind of the early part of his career, one of the first things he did other than TV was he worked on Ride the Whirlwind, which Nicholson also worked on. He was the writer of it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And as most people, maybe they know or don't know, but Jack Nicholson did not start off to be an actor. He started off to be a filmmaker and writer. And then he sort of fell into acting through Roger Corman's
And he's still pissed off.
Yeah. So that's the film where he works with Monty Hellman for the first time, who did Tulane Blacktop and a bunch of other stuff that Harry Dean Stanton worked on, and then including the film that I'm going to review. And then, but he said of that experience that, you know, it opened him up as an actor, that Nicholson gave him permission to kind of broaden his scope of what he was doing. And if you look at his sort of before career and after, this is the movie that really started him on becoming who he actually was. And it's, you know, the sort of the first notable thing, and he's still credited as Dean Stanton in it, is Cool Hand Luke. He's one of the guys in the prison in Cool Hand Luke.
Right on.
And he sort of shows up through the late 60s and early 70s, gets very easily swept up into the sort of very robust American film scene that's going on in the 70s, and especially the more independent film scene. But, you know, he is one of those guys that's reliably there. And it, there's too many, it's just too numerous to mention. And I also get the feeling that he's one of the actors who got more, you know how people say like someone's a comedian's comedian? Like he's an actor's actor.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, and a director's actor. And it, you know, whether he was necessarily resonating or well known with audiences, I suspect that even past Alien, most people wouldn't have known his name. He would have been, oh, that guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That guy. He's good. But directors knew who he was, and they liked putting him in films. And so when you start to get to the Watershed piece of like 1984, where he really breaks through in the sense, I don't mean that he ever broke through to become a big star, because I don't think that's really accurate, but I think broke through in the sense that anyone who even has a casual acquaintance with film kind of knows who he is now.
Right.
Right. That's to me, that's a product of the kind of aggregate affection for him in the filmmaking community. He wouldn't have gotten those opportunities in 1984 if he didn't have that, because you look at the kinds of directors he worked with, and they're very particular in that sense. So,
for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's also worth pointing out that, you know, very much like, say, Humphrey Bogart, who's an actor that, you know, at least in cadence and appearance, he kind of reminds me of, he didn't break out until pretty late in his life.
Until he was older. Yeah,
yeah, like his he was about, he was in the 50s when, like after Alien. So I think like in 76 he would have turned 50. So that's sort of when he starts to pick up momentum as, as a serious player in character acting.
When he was born, Powered Flight was less than 25 years old.
Yes.
It's a long life.
He was in the Navy in World War II.
Wow. That's amazing.
So those that's the kind of the scale that we're talking about. Yeah. So that, you know, that always, I do like those instances, especially now where you can remind somebody, it's like not everybody hits their big moment when they're 23, right? Like some people age into it and age into it beautifully. And there's a question worth asking, is Harry Dean Stanton Harry Dean Stanton before he's like 40 years old, in terms of like what that guy became as a screen presence?
Yeah.
Does that even work? If he's like 29, of course not. Like, it's just not, it's part of his entire laconic personality becomes the character that we all became so fond of.
Yeah. Now, there's this movie that's out right now, Lucky.
Yes.
Which is the first, my understanding is, the first lead role he's had since...
Since Paris, Texas.
Since Paris, Texas. Yeah. Yeah. Which is kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. And not, I mean, not unexpected, given the kind of career he had. But it's also... essentially a biography of him.
Yes.
At the end of his life. So
it is, yeah. So,
so that's sort of astounding.
Indeed. So one of the things, so we are, as I said, we're gonna look at two of his films from his canon, but then I have a third category, which is just sort of, let's talk about other notable work, and I do have some notes about Lucky that I want to bring up there.
Yeah.
But the first thing I'll say there, because you know, as you said, I am going to be talking about Paris, Texas as my main film, asked about why he didn't take more starring roles. He said, that's just too much damn work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they said after Paris, Texas, he could have done other starring roles. Yeah, he said, yeah, I don't want to work that hard.
It's too much work.
Yeah, so it's amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, first of all, my hat goes off to him for taking a starring role when he was 90. I believe they shot it when he was 89, but, you know, right up at the end there. And he does take a lead role again.
And also, I think, you know, where it does cross over into his personal life is you look at who his friends were. And it's sort of in the filmmaking community.
Yeah.
And those are people like Wim Wenders and David Lynch. Like, he seems to be able to, you know, he doesn't exude weird particularly.
Yeah.
And yet he seems so comfortable with weird.
Mm-hmm.
in the way that I think only sort of rural people can be, in that sense of like, there's no judgment.
Yep.
Oh, are you weird? Great.
Well,
you know,
something, I mean, again, not knowing him personally, I don't want to go too far down this road, but I do think it informs the work. Like, one of the things that's significant about Stanton, especially, I'd say, for kind of a rural, he's born in, I think it was Kentucky or was it Tennessee? In any event, from the South, rural guy, devout atheist, like fundamentally believed there is nothing. You know, he is not looking
down on us. And apparently never stopped reminding people.
Yeah, absolutely.
That there's nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
So he is not looking down at us from heaven right now. He is very comfortably in the void as a non-existent creature. And I do think it's like a little bit to what you say. Like there's a thoroughly non-judgmental aspect to him because to some extent he thinks none of this matters. Like, he's just sort of like, well, I don't care. I actually do have a quote on that because I was watching a documentary called Partly Fiction, which is about his life from a few years ago. And he's being interviewed by David Lynch, and Lynch says, how would you describe yourself? He says, there is no self. And Lynch follows with, how would you like to be remembered? He says, doesn't matter. So I do like the fact that...
yeah, that's great.
Right from the off, Harry Dean Stanton doesn't give a fuck about this show. He couldn't care less that we
that
are
is
here
correct.
Doing this. And that's good news because that takes the pressure off us entirely.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, and even like if you sort of, there's a great, what I am going to recommend, I guess we'll put it in the show notes, is there's a very good article in Vanity Fair about him that sort of talks about all of this. I'm just trying to find the article, but there's an article out there where he's basically remembered by all his friends. It's like an oral history.
Yeah.
And one of his best friends was Ed Begley Jr., which is sort of funny to think about those two together. They seem oddball to me, but kind of amazingly oddball.
Mm-hmm.
They seem like a Mutt and Jeff.
A little bit.
Sort of thing.
Especially when you think like Begley must have been a lot younger than Stanton. They were both in the movie that you're going to talk about.
Yeah, they're both in Cockfighter.
Yeah.
And that's but they were friends before that. Here's what's interesting. They were friends before that. They used to drink every night at Dan Tana's. In Hollywood, to the point where they went to do Cockfighter. They were away for a week, and after a week, Begley realized, "Oh, I should call Dan Tana's. They're probably worried about us," and they were. He called Dan Tana's. He spoke to the owner, and the guy was like, "I was going to call the police."
Wow, that's amazing.
I thought you died.
Well, that's just. That's just wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe this is a good segue to get into the films.
Sure.
So I'll go first.
Sure.
Because like you mentioned, I did Paris, Texas, and like you said, that's one of his very only starring roles. And I had not seen, as you know, I had not seen the film before because I'm delinquent. One of the things you're going to discover as we go through Death Watch in the many, many years to come, I am incredibly delinquent on major works in the history of filmmaking, as I believe we all are. And I don't hold that against anyone.
We've all got gaps.
I don't hold it against myself. I'm not here to apologize. But I hadn't seen this before. I had actually only started to look at Wim Wenders' work in the last couple of years. They did a retrospective of him a couple of years ago at TIFF Bell Lightbox that I attended a few. I really had a good time with
Alice
in the Cities, which I felt was kind of in some ways a bit of a dry run for some aspects of Paris, Texas. The road trip with the young child, the third act of that movie sort of reminded me very much of that. I'm a big fan of Tokyo Ga, where Wenders goes to Tokyo to sort of track down the legacy of Ozu. And obviously, I mean, who doesn't love the Angel movie? It's great.
Wings of Desire. Yes, that's great.
That's correct. But this was my first time seeing Paris, Texas. And the first thing I guess I wanted to say about it was possibly because of Stanton himself and the unaffected chameleon-like nature of his performance just in that movie, like where he's very hard to pin down by necessity because he's playing a very enigmatic character. Yeah, I found it very hard to figure out what this movie was trying to do until it was done. I love movies like that, right? Like I like a movie where I will give maximum credit to a movie where halfway through I'm like, I'm kind of bored. I don't know if I dig this. And then when it's over, it kind of hits me like a thunderclap how all the pieces fit together and why they were the way that they were.
Yeah, and it's the coming together of really two sort of icons of laconic, like it's both him and Sam Shepard.
Yeah.
Which, and they're both like they're so cut from a similar kind of cloth in how they communicate and like what their ideas are and stuff. So
for sure.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderfully unornamented script by Sam Shepard, as you said. So for those who aren't familiar.
Yeah. Who we also lost in this show could have been about him, frankly.
Yeah,
so yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
And something we should say about Death Watch, ain't no time clock on it. Like we will either jump into action when somebody major dies, or we'll just pick someone from the last few years or wherever and do a month on them, because we don't have a boss. You know, we do whatever we want. It's really it's a nice thing to be us. So Paris, Texas begins with Harry Dean Stanton wandering out of the desert, just disheveled, wearing a MAGA hat. He's got the beard. I'm sorry, all red ball caps.
All red ball caps are Make America Great Again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. Absolutely.
It really, for him, for sure not.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah.
I know.
Anyway.
So it comes to pass that he's basically been wandering the world as an unknown party for several years at this point. I think it's like 4 or 5 years. And his brother, who is played by another person who, when we lose him, I will be heartbroken, Dean Stockwell, one of the all-time greats. Love him. He comes to collect him and bring him back to his family in Los Angeles, where it transpires that that Dean Stockwell and his wife have been raising Harry Dean Stanton's child as their own because he disappeared.
Right.
You know, the mother vanished, then he vanished, and now someone had to look after the kid, so they did. So that's kind of the sketch of the plot. You know, I said that I found it sort of hard to pin down what this thing was doing, because I think sort of act by act, it's doing completely different things, right? Like the first act, which is basically Stockwell and Stanton on the road heading back to Los Angeles, and Stockwell trying to figure out what the hell happened to this guy. Like, what, you know, will he wander off again? Sometimes he does. You know, that's the road trip act, like the couple of oddballs on the road. And you could do a whole movie that's just that, right? Like that's...
Like a Melvin and Howard style, just them on the road.
Those two guys on the road, particularly because in the first act, Harry Dean Stanton doesn't talk. He's mute.
Yeah.
So he has nothing to say. So it's really all just being played off Dean Stockwell's increasingly operatic frustration with his brother. There's a really nice story there about how brothers look after each other and what those responsibilities feel like and so forth.
And I feel like... The brother is a role that Harry Dean Stanton played well,
sure,
astonishingly well,
mm-hmm,
a lot. I mean, if you know, the last 5 minutes of The Straight Story, is maybe the best acting I've ever seen. It's pretty close.
I haven't seen The Straight Story, but I did see the last 5 minutes 2 days ago, and that's how I found out that he's the guy at the end of The Straight Story. I didn't know that until like 2 days
ago. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, now I want to watch the whole film. But yeah, you're right. Like in that scene between the two of them, magnificent.
More stuff happens in the silences in that scene than happens in the whole movie. And it's a great movie. So,
yeah, for sure. So then you move on to the second act, and then you're in sort of the surrogate family drama where he's meeting and getting to know, now he's talking.
Yeah.
He's meeting and getting to know his son. He's dealing with his sister-in-law, who is concerned that he is going to take their child away from them, which is a very valid concern, because then at the beginning of the third act, he does. and he heads out in search of the love of his life, who turns out to be played by Nastassia Kinski. And then the movie morphs again, and it becomes this other thing, this incredible two-hander love story between these two people who haven't seen each other for 5 years, delivered entirely in monologues through a two-way mirror. Like it's it's mental. Like I can't actually believe. And so Kinski gets the focus for the first portion of that, and she does quite a bit of really excellent work, and you play a lot off Stanton just reacting, which is obviously a very, you know it's a difficult thing to do as well as someone like Stanton does it. There's no artifice there.
No, he's never not fully. Yeah. So, and again, it's what makes him so great as a bit player is he's never not fully present. He's never not fully connected to what's happening.
Yeah.
And not in a way that has any technique to it.
Yeah.
There's no tricks. He's just, he's just listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we go into the monologue, and Harry Dean Stanton delivers this monologue that's probably, 7 or 8 minutes long. A lot of it played on her reacting now, because he is facing away from her. They've staged it such that he can't even look at her, hearing what he's got to say. And he's describing in the third person their relationship. And Ebert called it one of the great monologues in the history of cinema. You could argue it's one of the great monologues in the history of drama. Like, it's a monumental piece of stagecraft. And, you know, not like he does it all in one or anything like technically complex like that. He just sort of, you know, there's cuts and there's edits there, but the consistency of the tone, the consistency of the performance. And then it struck me as something we never see Harry Dean Stanton do, or we don't see him do often, which is he plays very distant characters, right? Very, either because of problems that he is having or just sort of the nature of the character. He is not fully emotionally engaged in the moment in a lot of cases.
Well, he only ever, always get the feeling with him, always in all the parts. So regardless of kind of what the situation calls for, it always seems like he only talks if he absolutely has to.
Yeah, absolutely. And he doesn't talk much. Like I said, he's been through the whole first act.
Yeah.
So the fact that he then sort of describes this extraordinary personal wound in incredible detail. Not the wound that she left, but sort of that he deserved it.
Yeah.
That his behavior in this relationship with this person was so unacceptable, so not
that he was
himself,
like the author of his own.
Yeah, he was he basically he's confessing the destruction of this relationship. And like I said, this is that click moment where you see all the pieces up till then. And you're like, Jesus, this guy loved this woman so much that when she left, he wandered into the desert for 5 years. He completely lost his identity and his personality. That's, you know, level one. But then when you describe that is all because of behavior that he undertook that destroyed the relationship, that he's possessing this enormous feeling of self-recrimination, of guilt, of all of these other things, that is what drove him to do this. You know, it's an absolutely incredible 15 or 20 minutes of cinema that is built on, you know, the preceding 2 hours to really just deliver this enormous punch. So, yeah, I did okay in picking a film to watch.
You did. And of course, I alluded to it in the sort of in the overview of him. But that film, Paris, Texas, came out the exact same year as Repo Man.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about how to be cool.
Yeah.
How does a person become cool?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is Paris, Texas is the movie where he becomes cool to everyone over 30.
Yeah.
Anyone who is even remotely connected to their own mortality, their own sense of loss, their own sense of missed engagement, that Paris, Texas is a film that speaks to that deep sense inside all of us. And Repo Man is the movie that speaks to everyone under 30.
Yeah.
Repo Man is the movie that says fuck the man.
Yep, absolutely.
and is so dynamic and new feeling. And like the filmmaking in Repo Man is so astonishingly brand new feeling in 1984. I wish I'd gone back and rewatched it for this.
I was going to as well.
Yeah, and I should, because I feel like even now you would be like, man, this thing's so fun.
Yeah.
It's so freewheeling and fun and great. Yeah. Well, it just hits all the, like, then everyone of almost every age has a way to, like, latch onto him as, like, that's what cool looks like.
Yeah.
Right? And the choices of those two characters to play, it's obviously not, I refuse to think there was a design.
Yeah.
There was clearly no design on his part at all.
No.
But, but 5 years after Alien and then you make those two films, boy, that's something.
Yeah,
that's an
MVP year.
Yeah, and I don't think Alien is his breakthrough in the way that it's Sigourney Weaver's, because just don't think that people, I don't think people really appreciated how good the bit part players, how good Yaphet Kotto, how good Harry Dean Stanton
I think
Stanton
it took
was.
Some time for people to realize how good the ensemble cast of Alien was.
Yeah, yeah. And how well directed those scenes are and all of that, like with all that overlapping dialogue and stuff. But that 1984, man, that's when that is the breakthrough, is those two films together.
Yeah, anyway. Absolutely.
You pointed out you've got big gaps.
Yeah.
famously about a year ago I walked away from movies after having closed not all my gaps, but many of them. I spent about a year and a half closing gaps.
Sure.
Which was a fun year and a half. We've maintained on other shows that there's no canon. There's no set list of films that you sort of have to see. But that being said, there was certainly a list of films that I wanted to see.
Sure.
And I mostly saw them all.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be an interesting show as we go down this road of me finding ever increasingly more obscure things to talk about.
Well, this is what I'll let me describe for the listener how this went, because we're talking about what to do for the first episode, and we're kind of formalizing the structure of the show and whatnot, and we're talking about Harry Dean Stanton, and I'm like, I want to do Paris, Texas, because he's just died and everyone's talking about it, and I haven't seen it. And you're like, well, here, let's figure out what I want to do. And you just start scrolling through his IMDb, and you start at the back, and you kind of work your way forward, and you're like, what's got the weirdest name, or like, what's the thing that I haven't seen? That, oh, there's a movie called Cockfighter.
Oh, what? I knew there was a movie called Cockfighter.
Yeah.
that was a movie that, like, if you go deep on the 70s, you got to go pretty deep to get to, like, Scarecrow and Cockfighter and, like, there's some great movies mm-hmm. farther down the catalog. But, you start with Dog Day and Parallax View and whatever. It takes a while to get, Deer Hunter or whatever.
For sure.
So anyway, I was like, oh, yeah, I get a chance to see Cockfighter. I've always wanted to see Cockfighter.
There you go.
That's great. Cockfighter is a Roger Corman production. And again, this connection between Stanton and Nicholson and Corman and like all of these sort of like, this is all kind of in the universe of where he would have been at the time.
Yeah.
He's not the lead.
No.
Because as we mentioned, there's only been two films where he was. But he is, I would say, second lead. He's the bad guy.
He's the antagonist. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's the star is Warren Oates.
Mm-hmm.
Another great, laconic, sort of inscrutable actor that just, if you haven't seen Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia,
mm-hmm.
oh, man, so good. And really, he's the movie Hinge. But Harry Dean Stanton is in it, and Ed Begley Jr., little baby Ed Begley Jr.
is in overalls.
Yeah. I tweeted out a picture of him because I thought it was so cute. And Ed Begley Jr. retweeted me.
Yeah.
I was so happy with that. It mm-hmm. was lovely. And it is the kind of movie, one of the kinds of movies that I love the most, because I am a big fan of mildly criminal subcultures.
Sure.
Okay, so pickpockets, safecrackers, the illegal betting things, underground poker. All of these worlds have unique language, unique rules, unique human beings. One of my other favorite films I just purchased on came out on a beautiful Blu-ray this week, which is Hard Times, the first Walter Hill film about bare-knuckle boxing in the Depression.
Very nice.
For money. That's another criminal subculture. There's a great film from the 70s called Harry in Your Pocket that's all about pickpockets with James Coburn. Like, these are it's so... The bonus for me is if you can watch a movie with great characters, but then also actually kind of explore a world.
Yeah.
That's steeped. Moonshiners is another one. Like, these are my thing. I love this. And so I was like, oh, as disgusting and sort of horrific as cockfighting is, I want detail. And that's what you get.
Yeah.
So this is a great movie. Harry Dean Stanton plays the antagonistic cockfighter to Warren Oates as sort of, he's the savant, the chosen one who is the greatest trainer of.
It's the Rocky of cockfighter movies.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
And it shows all the rules. It shows all the weird sort of tricks and...
Now I want to have a D&D character named Rocky Cockfighter.
It also has one of the great taglines, I think, in the history of movies, which is that he came into town with his cock in his hand.
No.
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yeah. Oh, something like that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's something like he came into town with his cock in his hand.
Very good.
And it was illegal in 49 states or something.
Oh,
I've got.
My God.
Yeah, yeah. Hold on.
That's actually really good. Yeah, I mean, I watched the film too because I.
Yeah, he came. I'll read it exactly because it's even better. He came into town with his cock in his hand, and what he did with it was illegal in 49 states.
Good Lord. Wow.
Yeah.
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 Like you said, this thing is not shy on the details of cockfighting. This is basically a cockfighting documentary that just happens to have actors in it.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. And that's the other thing is, if you're going to show something, just the closer you can get to doing it for real, the better. So, there's, they're staging the fights in the sense that they're filming it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
No, I mean, I think that you can't train a cockfighter. I mean, a cock. You can't listen.
Hold on. Gonna stop you right there.
You can't train a rooster to cockfight safely. So,
oh no, yeah, the birds are definitely the bird blood is real blood. Yeah.
So we should point out that you know, vegans may want to skip this film.
Yeah, I don't know if I stayed around at the end long enough to see whether the no animals were harmed in the making of this film
either.
Was on there.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it was not.
No, I don't think so. Animals were clearly harmed in the making of this film.
And you know, I guess there's some culpability there as a viewer. On that front, probably by today's standards, I think this movie is probably not okay in that sense.
By today's standards, absolutely.
But as a way of documenting this thing that was clearly really happening quite regularly in sort of out of the way rural communities, and you know, it's the really interesting thing is this also has a main character who's a mute.
Yeah,
which is sort of a weird tie-in to your film. So Warren Oates is a mute, but the film has voiceover narration by him throughout. So you're hearing his voice. He's just, he never, until there's sort of a watershed moment, he never speaks.
Yeah.
And it's a monastic, based on a bad experience, it seems like he's sort of taken a vow of silence.
Taking a vow of silence, I know.
So that's great. Every scene with Harry Dean Stanton is great. He doesn't actually have any scenes with Ed Begley.
Yeah.
Even though they were probably, you know, hanging out around the set afterwards. Ed Begley Jr. plays a farm boy who is part of basically a scam where they lure cockfighters off to a farm and then basically turn the tables on them and take all their money in an unfair way. And he has a fight with Warren Oates that is one of the better movie fights I've seen. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Have you seen this movie?
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it this week.
Oh, you did? Okay, because I didn't go back and watch Paris, Texas, so I feel bad now. But
I wouldn't think that you'd have to, but I sort of just wanted to get into the rhythm of the thing.
So I feel like I should have contributed more in that conversation, what did you think of Cockfighter?
Because I
just really enjoyed, I loved all the detail of like the way he sort of tries to score the beak of the thing to make it look like it's injured and get the bets up and all of that. And
well, here's a question that maybe kind of ties into our featured actor. How much do you figure Harry Dean Stanton had to learn about the business and behavior of cockfighting versus how much he already knew?
I think it's more like how much did he have to teach everyone else?
Yeah. I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah.
There are two weird connections between this and Paris, Texas. One is the mute, as you said. The other is men in their 40s and 50s who are with like 17-year-old girls, which Laurie Bird's in the beginning of the movie. She's in Tulane Blacktop as well.
Yeah.
Playing first Monty, sorry, not Monty Hellman, Warren Oates' girlfriend, and then Harry Dean Stanton basically buys her.
Yeah, he does.
And it's just like, yeah. One of the things I've been thinking about.
But it's also about how women, really young women, hang around this thing.
Sure, yeah.
In a weird way.
Yeah.
Like it's their ticket out of town.
Yeah. No, I know.
So it's not even like they're like, preying on, you know, those women are kind of
that is the way it is presented, certainly. Yes.
Well, and again, you know, we can get into the sexual politics of this, but those guys aren't aware that they're benefiting from the system they're in.
No, of course not.
But of course they are.
Yeah.
But the women are in that moment are the ones making the moves because they don't have any choices.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. One of the things when we started talking about the show, one of the things I was aware of is that just kind of by dint of the time frame, people dying now who were very significant, probably in the 20th century, we're going to be dealing with a lot of men, a lot of white men, and a lot of sexual politics that have gone out of date since the works that we will be looking at. So in both of these cases, I was like, yeah, there's stuff there that, you know, makes me uncomfortable, makes me genuinely uncomfortable.
Wouldn't necessarily pass today.
But in another sense, it is interesting to step into a document of this moment because I have never spent this much time with actual cockfighters, you know. So like I said, like a documentary with actors in it, it's like, yeah, this is a subculture I really had no idea was this well developed.
It's really well developed. It has judges and all kinds of things. But it also, the other thing about it that's sort of really interesting to me is if you ever see a movie that has cockfighting in it, it's always portrayed as much more gross than how this movie portrays it.
Mm-hmm.
This everything takes place outdoors in sunlight. There's a kind of casualness about this that is seems refreshingly real. Whenever you see a movie where there's people cockfighting, it's always like the worst possible. It's like, imagine the bar on Tatooine,
mm-hmm.
But as if it were portrayed in real life.
Yeah,
you know, like it's a hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah,
that's where cockfighting takes place. Sweaty, dirty rooms with dirty, awful human beings. Like,
yeah,
that's nothing. You know, all these people are rural and probably lightly in the KKK, but certainly
sure.
just rural.
Yeah,
and they're not. They're just kind of going about their lives, and it feels way more like a kind of a state fair.
Yeah,
than anything else, right?
So naturally, because the film is structured the way it is, the finale takes place at whatever it is, the state,
the championship,
level, the state level championship of cockfighting, yeah. and you know, at a plantation.
Can I just correct you? It is not a championship; it's a championship.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Just be careful. All right.
I'm sorry.
Anyway,
and yeah, it because of where it's set, this basically takes place on like a plantation, and I'm looking around and I'm like, boy, a lot of people died here.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like human beings
yeah.
died here,
yeah.
And then also they killed a lot of chickens. Yeah. What, anything else on cockfighting?
Just that I think it is worth your time because it's, you know, it is so, if you talk about like, oh, this movie could never get made today. Yeah. That's this movie.
Yeah.
Could never
sure.
get made today. And I'm so appreciative of the fact that it did get made, that this whole world got, you know, really nicely documented.
Yeah.
You know?
And we speak, I think, derogatorily in a lot of cases of the Roger Corman oeuvre. There was a lot of cases like this where there's a movie where he can send, you know, Monty Hellman and a crew, they probably worked on this for what, like 21 days, right? Like not much.
No.
You know, they're just like, okay, go to there's a ranch over here. Go shoot this movie. Doesn't cost a lot of money. Get some of your friends to be in it. We're going to release it on like, you know, 20 screens and that'll be it. But I'm glad it exists because, you know, it is really the antecedent of the absolute grassroots ground level filmmaking that's happening today on iPhones and stuff, where it's just like, go and do this thing, go find a subculture,
yeah,
and make a movie within it.
And the other thing that's so great is that as long as you could come up with a hook that was exploitational,
yeah,
whether it's he had his cock in his hands or Caged Heat,
yeah,
the Jonathan Demme film or whatever, as long as there was some aspect that he knew he could put on a poster,
yeah,
you could make whatever movie you wanted.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of these films that have this exploitational aspect but are actually quite considered films.
Yeah.
And that's Tulane Blacktop is one of those films too. It's a movie that's, I mean, it's ostensibly about drag racing.
Yeah.
But, well, it's so much more interesting.
A lot more than that.
Yeah, yeah. And so is this, right? Yeah.
Speaking of people who have died, I mean, doing Laurie Bird would actually be really interesting. She died when she was like 25 years old, but, you know, she was in this. She was in Tulane Blacktop. She's a very interesting actress who obviously had a terrible, terrible life. And it would be, you know, it would be, she'd be worth eulogizing as well.
All right.
But maybe for another time.
Let's table it.
Yeah. So this segment would be the opportunity to toss out other Harry Dean Stanton roles that we want to talk about, although I think we've covered sort of the major ones. We've already talked about Alien. We've talked about Repo Man. We've mentioned Lucky in passing. I mean, I will say that, you know, that movie, which is in theaters now as we're recording this, is well worth your time. John Carroll Lynch's debut feature. So very interesting to have a character actor directing what is essentially a two-hour homage to a character actor.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it touches all of these beats. you could make the argument, actually, and in this, sorry, spoilers for a movie that doesn't really have a plot. At the very end of Lucky, Harry Dean Stanton wanders into the desert. So you can make the argument that he wanders into the desert at the end of this movie and comes out at the beginning of Paris, Texas. Like, but there's all kinds of things like that. One of the things we actually haven't talked about at all is his singing,
which is tremendous.
Yeah, he's an incredible singer. So he does sing in Lucky. He does have a song that he gets invited to a kid's birthday party, and then he just starts singing a Mexican song with a Mexican band. And
And I feel like I always, on some level, I always mix Paris, Texas up with Tender Mercies.
Which one is Tender Mercies?
Tender Mercies is the one with Robert Duvall where he's the aging country and western singer.
Right, yeah.
Because they're both kind of about these irascible old men that like come into these very, very rural settings. And mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And so again, I mentioned the documentary from a few years ago called Partly Fiction, which is less a documentary and more of, you know, 2 hours of Harry Dean Stanton just singing into camera. Because there's very little insight into his life because he doesn't really want to provide that. But boy, does he sing some songs. And yeah, the voice on that guy, and there's a there's a way to sing country where it sounds like you're completely out of control, but you're completely in control.
Yeah.
That I adore. And he's wonderful at that. So that film is worth watching for that reason alone. And Lucky is absolutely worth watching just as kind of a summation of every aspect of his charm.
Yeah, and I mean, the nice thing about this is you want to recommend other things. And there's no wrong moves here.
No.
It's not like a lot of films where I'm like, oh, he's not good in that one.
Yeah.
You know, if he shows up, it's good. I mean, I think that it's not the greatest movie, but he is really quite lovely in Pretty in Pink. He really is.
Of course.
It's you know, he's the most human aspect of that movie for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's, if you haven't seen it yet, please see how you can screw it up by watching Last Temptation of Christ.
Interesting. I haven't seen Last Temptation of
Christ.
That's
like virtually the only way you can mess up somebody as good as Harry Dean Stanton is watch Last Temptation of Christ, watch Martin Scorsese make every wrong move with that particular performance.
Wow. Martin Scorsese and every wrong move are phrases I don't often hear in the same sentence.
You don't. But and I love Last Temptation of Christ, and I think it has amazing gifts to give to a viewer, but it also has a whole bunch of disciples that sound like they're from around the corner in Brooklyn.
Nah.
And that is, he's one of them, and Harvey Keitel is miscast, and like, hey, yo, Jesus, hey. You know, there's like a real...
Fantastic.
Yo, Pontius Pilate's coming for you. You know,
we gotta hide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. One of yous will betray me. You know, like it's weird.
Right.
Right? And then I think just watch his work with David Lynch.
Yeah.
Because if anybody really gets him, whether it's, you know, whether it's A Straight Story or Fire Walk With Me or the current work he just did on the Twin Peaks series, I mean, that's a guy that really, you know, David Lynch is what I'm talking about when I say, like, it's deeply weird, deeply peculiar, and deeply Midwestern at the same time. Deeply kind of, the normalcy makes it more weird.
Right.
So that's where I would go with if you're trying to just do an overview.
Yeah. So Lynch is one of my major gaps. I've done almost no Lynch and watching this much Harry Dean Stanton this month, because Lynch is in Lucky as in a supporting role, basically playing the Harry Dean Stanton part in Lucky.
Huh, yeah. And he is a wonderful actor.
He's a wonderful actor.
Yeah.
So yeah, this has kind of cued me up that it's time for me to dive into that work a little bit.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is everything I have to recommend.
Fantastic.
What's next?
In that case, this is where we shall leave you. I don't think we should announce the November episode just yet, but we have a few ideas. One of them is a little bit offside, but it might be very interesting. We will announce it on our Twitter feed in the first week of November.
And as we announce our shows on our Twitter feed.
Yeah, we'll mention it on Death Watch Pod on Twitter. But until then, again, this is our maiden voyage, so we're definitely interested in hearing.
We'd love some feedback.
We'd love some feedback. Love to know what you think structurally, what you think of us. You know, would you like to hang out with us in a coffee shop, or do you prefer this recording booth setup? But furthermore, like, just, you know, obviously, on a career as broad as Stanton, we have carved only the tiniest slice of what he did. So please feel free to call out other work that you thought was significant or that touched you particularly, and or that we should check out, because we would love to check out more of these films. I mean, you don't have to. You're fine. You've seen all of them. But I haven't. You know, I'm always looking for a recommend. I don't have a lot going on at home. I need something to do on an evening. So that would be great. But anyway, until next time. So our plan is to drop an episode on the last Friday of every month, because that seems appropriately funereal to me.
Yep.
So look for us at modernsuperior.com. Like I said, we'll be submitting these to the podcast store, so you'll be able to subscribe there.
For a second, I thought you were going to say we'll be submitting these to the Academy.
We will also be submitting them to the Academy. That's correct.
Yeah. I think that there's an Oscar podcast award coming.
There should be. Right? There absolutely should be. And I mean, you know, our last show, we were okay with it kind of being under the radar, but this one, we want to go as big and as broad as we possibly can. We want to basically be as powerful and popular as it's possible to be in podcasting. That was a lot of P's in one sentence. Within the next 5 months. So anything you can do help grease those wheels, please do.
Yeah, I mean, I've already given notice at work.
Fantastic. That's good.
This is all my eggs are in this basket.
That's great, because I received your letter with your salary expectations, and they're significant. So we need to really goose that Patreon feed.
Patreon. Go to that Patreon.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Thank you for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you next month.
This episode has been brought to you by the Modern Superior Podcast Network.